What's up, guys? Welcome to Just So We're Clear, a podcast brought to you straight out of Singapore with your host, Marissa Tru, and myself, Hanley Hofer. Now, if you've listened to us before, well, you know the deal. But if you're new here, well, hey, welcome.
So on this show, we cover pretty much everything to do with modern life. Female empowerment, sex, mental health, finances, you name it, we do it in the most uncut way possible.
Mm-hmm. So grab a coffee, maybe even a glass of wine.
No, definitely some wine.
Light a scented candle.
Or maybe you're at the gym or you're cooking your dinner. But consider this next hour your time to feel like you're not alone. Because trust us,
we get it. It's Just So We're Clear. Well, hello there, our gorgeous, gorgeous listeners. Back on the podcast, Hanley and Marissa. It is almost the end of the year.
It is. It's November.
I know, because I was looking at the calendar recently, and you know the moment like the 17th of December hits, like when it's close to the 20th. The year is done because everyone taps out. They're in like festive mood, like no one's really working. And that's not that far from now. That's only 6 weeks away.
So, 2022 is done.
It's almost done. I think we can just already approach the rest of the year as if it's done.
I'm in holiday mode like now.
I'm always on holiday mode. Woo!
Self-employment!
So why don't we start the episode as we normally do? Let's do a vibe check, but I'm going to try a different technique without vibe check today.
Okay. What's your new technique?
We're going to do what I do in the women's circles.
Okay.
Mentally.
I'm going to cry again.
Mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. Let's gently go down the list. Where you at today? How has it been?
Okay. Mentally, I am a little stagnant, but that's just due to the burnout of my last work trip, so that's fine. Emotionally, tiny anxious flare-ups, but I think that's associated with the first part in like trying to catch up on sleep. Physically, also coming off the end of jet lag, so tired, but okay, because it's just like how these things go. And was last one spiritually. Spiritually, I think I'm good. Like, I'm calm.
Okay. That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
It's like your standard, to be honest.
Like standard issue, Marissa's tired.
From work.
And low-key stressed from nothing. And...
But her spirit's fine.
Yeah, still funny.
Okay, I can take that. That's a very you answer. For me, so we start mentally. Mentally, I'm in a place of focus because I have a lot of work coming up that I'm excited for. So I feel like I'm in this zone of like, I have some goals I want to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, girl's a fucking mess. She is a mess.
Let's talk about it.
Ah, she's all over the place.
It's my favorite one.
She's back. I'm in a place of deep conflict because...
You just horny. It's fine.
I'm horny. I'm horny.
Yes.
I'm emotionally horny.
You're emotionally horny. You're also physically horny. Like,
yes. Physically, I'm also horny. Spiritually... Horny.
So guys, if you didn't listen to the last episode, the reason we bring this up specifically is because Hanley made a very active and vocal point to tell us that all of her toys were dead. She didn't have any sexual drive or desire or appetite, and she was just gonna be a nun. To which I replied, call me in 2 weeks. And it has been 2 weeks, and Hanley, what's the latest?
I'm a fucking mess. I am a hot mess and I love it. I thrive in these moments. It's in these moments that I feel most alive.
So you're super horny. All the time.
So I thrive in these moments.
Are these toys charged
okay,
now?
Okay, I'm not super horny all the time, but I am definitely conflicted because I know the last time we said that I was like done. I don't want any like romantic links or interests and stuff. But interestingly, the way that life happens, something has popped up on my radar and it's caused me to develop a little bit of a pre-crush. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not letting myself indulge in calling it like a full-blown crush yet, but I have had something happen where I'm like, oh, that was a nice feeling that I wasn't expecting to have.
What's the difference? What's the difference between a pre-crush and a crush?
Well, the reason I say pre-crush for me is because I'm still holding up a boundary in a way, because I don't want to let myself go into a full crush. Mm-hmm. So I'm being very cautious with my heart because this person is really wonderful, but I'm also very aware that I'm at a point where I am emotionally not available. So I have a pre-crush. So it's more like, when I am emotionally available after I've done some work, then I'll let myself have a crush on you.
Okay, so a crush in this sense is something that you would actively go and pursue, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're basically just holding yourself back from acting on your attraction.
Yes.
Got you.
Because okay. Because my internal conflict is that I've met or I know somebody that I was like, oh, that's a really nice connection and feeling. But then my higher self is like, girl, you still need to freaking heal. So hold back and chill. And this is where the push-pull comes in from desire and crush feelings.
The excitement.
The excitement. Yeah, the butterflies. Like, and also the discipline and self-love to follow through with my own declaration of just independence and mm-hmm. more space mm-hmm. and time for me to just exist mm-hmm. without having a man or a partner in my world. Just
okay.
Clean, single, Hanley.
So it's about consciously reserving the affection for yourself rather than realizing you kind of want to instinctively give it to someone else because there is a new
sort
of, not target, but like light on the horizon.
Yeah, it's interesting. And like, and you know, in the honor and integrity of always being honest and vulnerable on this podcast, there is something about myself where I fully know it. I'm just one of these girls that doesn't stay single for long. And that is my pattern. I've always had, I told you, I've always mm-hmm. had a shiny thing. I've mm-hmm. always had like some attention from somewhere for like, it's literally my pattern. And now at 30, I've had enough experiences in my life to look back at the timeline and see how it works. Mm-hmm. And because I have the self-awareness of it now, it's like the higher self thing. What I know now, I can't pretend to not.
Right.
So I have to like stick within my lane.
Right.
And
so your higher self is recognizing your own patterns and isn't even predicting it. It's directly observing it and being like, no, this is precisely the thing we said that we weren't going to do again.
Yeah. And so here's temptation
to test
you. So yeah. I really want to stay in my own lane and not fall into temptation because I don't want to go back to my old habits.
Yeah, because I mean, we were talking even just in the last episode about how this is the first time you've truly been single and on your own in a very long time. And then during your trip was the first time it was a prolonged period where you genuinely had to just exist alone. And you found those feelings really confronting and very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, and now there's this, you know, a person on the horizon, it's like, oh, yay, excitement. And you can kind of go back into the, see, I'm not alone. There is somebody mm-hmm. there. There's always someone who's mm-hmm. got my back rather than being like, I should still have my own regardless of whether they were there or not.
100%.
Yeah.
So this is the journey I'm on. But let me tell you, girl, the things that you can't have, hot.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah,
right? And that's why I'm horny.
That's why nuns are always horny. Like...
That's why.
I figured it out.
But the thing, like, yeah, right? Like, the thing that you can't have, it just becomes even hotter. So. Yeah.
And if you don't believe us, try going on a diet.
Yeah.
Cut out gluten. Suddenly bread. So
girl,
sexy.
Girl, I'm on a love diet. I'm on a love diet. Love and lust diet.
The love and lust diet. Mm. No, so wait. So you're going to practice abstinence?
I'm going to practice firm boundaries. I can't practice abstinence. What the fuck?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what is a firm boundary if you're saying you're like with lust? Like edging? Like, like I'll do everything except orgasm. Like, what is it?
I will not let anyone have access to the quote unquote relationship privileges and treatment.
No penetration.
No.
Just the tip.
No. It's more like...
I get what you mean.
No.
I get what you mean.
Yeah.
The intimacy that
that
comes with something like sex.
Like, I want to date. If there's a connection enough that I want to hook up and sleep with someone, I'm not going to you know, stop myself from doing that because I'm me. But I'm not going to let that, like, fall into some intimate thing quick happen. Because that's the pattern. The pattern for me is not necessarily like, oh, don't, like, I just, like, hook up and all these things. No, no, my pattern is that I fall into things quite quick, quite intensely.
Mm-hmm. So, because in the last episode, again, we spoke about how even with hookups, there's a new kind of connection that you need to establish for yourself before you can really indulge in a hookup. Because it just makes it better. So I guess you kind of have to be quite conscientious of how much of a connection you're allowed to have.
Yeah. I don't know. I think.
That's interesting because it's like, what if you have, like, what if you go, I don't know, on a date and the guy is super charismatic and you're having the best time and you feel really connected, but then you're like, oh, too connected. Therefore, we won't.
I'll have to let you know when I get there because this is a new diet for me.
This is interesting.
This is me trying to break my patterns. But also another level of why the space and I really do want – I feel like an idiot making another declaration.
Do it!
But no, but this it's important to me is because I had a recent therapy session.
Okay.
And in this therapy session, we got to the core of why I have been feeling so shaken. My inner world has felt so disconnected. And it has come back to a very simple and beautiful value of trust with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go through a breakup and when we get hurt by any situation, and not just romantically, friendship-wise, in a career sense, with our family or with a lover, when someone hurts us, to a degree, when we step into the role of taking responsibility and accountability, we can't help but feel disappointed in ourselves. You know, we get like let down by ourselves because we put ourselves in a situation that let us get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the aftermath of these situations where you got hurt, what I've noticed is that I have broken a sense of trust with myself because I didn't protect myself enough to not get hurt. So I have recognized in this past therapy session that my trust with my own self is not as secure as I'd like it to be. And so my next season, hopefully the next few weeks, the focus that I really want to do is to rebuild that trust with myself. I want to trust me again so deeply.
I think it's really interesting because I fully agree with you on the notion of self-trust and basically protecting yourself to a degree. But the phrase like, let yourself get hurt, I struggle with because it's like, well, you don't necessarily need to protect yourself from an unpredictable harm.
Okay, I hear you. That's that too. Let me add another layer to this dynamic because it's not even that it's just I let myself get hurt, but I also sabotage parts of myself to make someone comfortable.
Okay.
When I reflect back at my last relationship, can I honestly say that I was being 100% fully expressionate in who I was?
So you were saying the compromises that you made on yourself in those situations should have never happened.
I was being a version of myself, which is still valid, but I wasn't being the full version of myself. And say I was being like 80% of myself, that 20% that I didn't let myself be in order to make him comfortable or the relationship more compatible. That's the part that I'm trying to forgive and build trust again in myself for.
Okay, I see you. But it's always tricky, right? Because on the one hand, you're like, I'm reserving that part of myself because I think they would be uncomfortable with it. And I think that goes for any kind of relationship. Like, your parents don't see absolutely every single side of you. I've not seen every single side of you. But then it's also like, are we anticipating what we think they won't accept?
Maybe. Okay, like, let me give an example for this, right? Like, let's just say that you're a vegetarian, right? Your whole life, you're a vegetarian. And then you meet this person and you fall head over heels in love or lust with them. And they're not vegetarian. They eat meat. And you love them so much that when there's meat on the table, you're like, let me just try a little meat.
You always go back to this vegetarian example, by the way.
Well, it's the best way I can put it. And then you eat a little meat and he's like, or they're like, oh, this is so great. You're trying meat. You're trying something different.
So but you the core feel of it you're is, compromising your values for the sake of appeasing the other person.
I think to a degree I did that in my last relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all guilty of that. Like, I've definitely watched myself kind of freeze up and almost control which sides of them I wanted to let them see. Mm-hmm. And then only come out of it afterwards being like, I should have just relaxed and seen if they would have just taken all of it.
Exactly. So then, like, coming back to the vegetarian thing, when the relationship is done, you come back and you're like, I don't like eating meat. Why did I for one second eat meat? Why would I do that to myself? I feel like I betrayed my values in that.
But I think we're, again, like, we're all guilty of that. And it goes back to right when we start dating when we're teenagers. And you're just like, you're so focused on the social approval aspect that you'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Like, you see it as like working out the solution to a problem and being like, ah, that's the answer. Eureka.
But yeah, like, I'll be easy. I'll like bend and like, you know.
Yeah, I'm the super palatable, super like, I'm the cool girl.
I'm the cool girl.
I'm the cool girl.
I'm chill. Like,
yeah, I'm fine with everything.
She that don't exist.
That thing you said, I'm not troubled by it.
Yeah, she doesn't exist. By the way, guys, like a chill girl, she doesn't exist. Don't pretend to be her, lady. Like, we're not chill. We all know that. So let's put that out there. So, and that's also a really daunting thing for even me to realize about myself, because it has shattered a sense of my own identity, because I've always thought that I was not that kind of woman. But in my last therapy session, when I broke down some of the things and we got really deep into what has been happening in my psyche and everything, I realized like there was that element of me that was self-betraying.
I get you. I'm trying to understand it from my life experiences. And I would say, I mean, obviously, you know, when you first start going out, say you meet someone and it's a first date, there is a lot of like, I guess, social posturing. You want to be flirty, you want to be cute. It goes right down to like the outfit that you've put on your body that day, just to be like, oh, I hope he likes me, sort of thing. Then that's natural. Like, that's normal. That's not, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with that. But then over the course of time, I would say the more I got fed up with dating and like the first date niceties and like the routine of it all, I started coming up to dates and being like, this is everything on the table. Like, take it or leave it. And if they left it, I was like, well, sick, because at least we got out of the way now. Which I spoke to a guy friend about it, and he was like, well, that's not correct either, because he was just like, part of the fun is obviously in the game at least a little bit. It's just like, it's like the chase. And the thing is, the chase is fun. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. We like the whole push-pull thing. We're like, ooh, he called me back, sort of thing. But then it's like, how do you find the balance where you play the game, enjoy the chase, without compromising any part of yourself? Impossible. Like everything in life.
It's hard. It's a journey. I think we all work on it. And I don't think that there's a certain level of experience or maturity when we'll like hit it even. I think it's just one of these things as humans that we're always going to experience. And it's because like there is a deep down common fear in arguably all of us, and I've said this before, where we just want to be accepted. We actually just want to be loved and liked. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like that whole thing, like I don't care what anybody thinks, like good for you, but I do. And I can admit that I do, because it's a very true and honest just experience of being human.
Yeah.
And so this thing that we do to mold and shape and to be compatible, like it all does stem from the thing of, I just want to be liked. And so the big work of like self-love and self, you know, compassion is to get to a stage where you like yourself enough and so much that you don't need to feel like, I hope they like me. But that is so fucking hard to do.
But also, let's not forget the bare basics of just who we are as human beings, which is we are social animals. Like, yeah, social approval.
We need a tribe. Yeah.
Yeah, social approval is always going to play some kind of part in our existence. It just is the way it is. It's just about making sure that you don't conform and compromise on yourself to belong in a tribe that doesn't actually belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about making sure that whatever energy you do put out, find the people that will accept that. And that's scary.
Like, that's the push-pull. It's like, how much real of me can I put out that you like? And then you're like, oh, that. And then can I do more? It's like those little tests of how much of my onion layers can I unpeel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes back to this idea, like, you and I have always waxed lyrical about how unapologetic we are. And then we're saying in this respect, we're like, sometimes we're a little bit apologetic. Yeah. And it's so natural.
It's like, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. Please, but like, I also me. Do. I yeah. really give a fuck.
It's just
humanness.
Which goes back to something you and I were discussing before, which is a lot of you listening to this podcast know a lot more about us than some of the even our friends do. Because they don't listen to this. So there's the element of vulnerability there. There's the element of, like, sometimes we finish these episodes and we get a little bit of anxiety after being like, oh, I spilled too much. Or like, oh, someone's going to judge me for that side of what I've had to say, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And again, it all plays into this. We just want to belong because we're social creatures and we want to feel like... ourselves are okay.
And I love this expression. I think we, like... own it a bit more, because that is your truth, right? That is our core, like, hook in a way.
Yeah.
So
it's your differentiator.
Yeah. And you know how, like, the world can be very black and white and ruthless and be like, just love yourself. Like, that's all you need.
Which is also toxic.
Yeah, it's toxic as hell. So let's just, like, allow more space for these middle areas to just, like, admit, like, have more admittance into our fears and, like, the truths of just who we are.
Yeah. I think it's all well and good to say, let's, again, to keep this to the dating analogy, to go on a date and put your best foot forward and, like, dress cute or whatever and come home and still feel like, oh, I hope he really likes me, even if he's only learned about 10% of you in that
yes,
first instance.
And don't judge yourself for having that thought, oh, I hope they like me.
Yeah, which is, like, they're probably thinking the same thing.
They are 100% thinking the same thing. Like, I think the true power is when we go out, when we, like, we reverse it and we go, do I even like them? You know, like, it's the taking the power back. And yes, you definitely need to be thinking like that. But it's not black and white. It's not either or. You can't be on the other side being like, this is a test if I even like them. Who cares if they like me? It's both.
It's both. I think it comes down to, it's fully okay to be like, oh, I hope they like me. But where it becomes important is if they don't, you say, well, okay, then that's not up to me anymore. Mm-hmm. I'll move on because we're not a match. It's only at the point where you're like, oh, I hope they like me. Oh, they don't. What's it going to take?
Yes.
That's where we have a problem.
Yes. Yeah. And so I realized, like, that's the thing that happened in the therapy session. There was this part, it wasn't a big part of the relationship, but it was a small part that I was approaching it with that attitude. Mm. Like, what's it going to take for us to work?
But then it's just a matter of almost validation in that respect.
There is a level of validation. There also is a level of just love and consideration. When you're in a relationship and you love someone, you want it to work. Mm. So you do these things.
But then,
like, subconsciously, blindly, where you don't even realize you're doing the thing of, like, I'll do what it takes.
Again, though, there's a difference between, like, what do I have to do to make this work for the both of us versus who do I have to be to make this work mm-hmm. for the both of us?
Yeah.
And it's about, again, what you were saying, if you're compromising your character versus finding solutions together, those are very different responses to a similar problem.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%. So coming back to the thing about self-trust, I'm at that point now because that realization of, like, ew, why was I doing that to myself mm-hmm. has created a break in that trust with my own, like, spirit, soul, my inner self. Mm. So that's my focus. And so the next question is, when you have broken a sense of trust with yourself, what are the steps that you do to rebuild that?
That's a very good question. Because I think of, when I think of self-trust, for me, it's not, you know, necessarily the mistakes that I've made or, like, you know, when I have broken that self-trust in, to take your example, trying to be the person that I think the other person wants me to be. My self-trust always comes down to, are you going to be okay? Like, do you trust yourself to get out of this? Mm-hmm. That's where mine lies. So it's like making sure that that is intact always.
Okay.
And that comes down to remembering where all my strengths are.
Okay.
And, like, what I bring to the table.
Okay.
And that I can exist without, say, in, again, if this is a dating situation, without that person.
So I hear you. And I think that's a really good technique. I'm going to do that. I'm going to sit down and write the list of why I am the most amazing woman in the world.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Why are you the perfect woman? Because you are. And yeah. I challenge everyone to write this list because you will realize that you are the perfect woman.
So these are the steps that I plan to take.
Okay.
That I think are going to help me. I'll let you know if they do. Definitely writing the list of why I am the perfect woman. I'm going to write myself a letter of acknowledgement of that version of Henley in that relationship existed, but you're not that version of her anymore, and to give her love and to say goodbye to her. And then, and this is my method of building trust in myself, discipline. So I realize that I trust myself most and I'm in a good place with myself when I follow through with my routine and discipline, when I follow through with the things that I say with action. So it's very simple. It's the whole, I'm going to wake up early today and I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week and I'm actually going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be more mindful with where I spend my energy and I'm going to stick to that boundary. And that is how I build that trust in myself again. These things that look very curated on Instagram of like routine, like
that shit works.
That shit works.
Discipline is an excellent.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I think I do the
like my morning
thing.
Routine thing, like all that stuff we see, like before we roll our eyes at it, like actually these things do have an effect on our relationship with ourselves.
Oh, no, it's so true. Like, for example, again, like if my insomnia gets out of control, right? Or say my anxiety is out of control. I will wake up. If it's not the right hour, I won't judge myself for it because I used to judge myself for not getting up of bed on time, even if I'd only slept for like 2 hours. I get myself to the gym. That's my bedrock. Mm-hmm. Like my discipline is there. And that's the point at which I'm like, you still got it. You're still good. You're still in control.
Mm-hmm.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking
Follow
about
through
it.
With the things you said you'll do for yourself.
But listening to you makes me realize where I'm lacking, and we've covered this before, and this is another reminder, which is making me think, shit, I really gotta do that, is the self-compassion thing. It's the, I don't acknowledge, like, the, I'm sorry you went through that, and it's okay that you made that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much like, you made a mistake, fix it. It's very...
So like you're telling me, write a letter of why you're an amazing woman. I'm going to tell you, write a letter to acknowledge versions of yourself you haven't looked at yet.
Yeah, because... Mm. Oh, it's almost like a punishing thing.
Is it?
Sometimes.
It's... Well, okay, why do you feel like that's punishing? Why do you feel like going back and acknowledging versions of yourself is punishing?
No, I'm not saying... No, I'm saying that this is the antidote to the punishing attitude that I've held. Like, in my mind, I'm like, you made a mistake, fix it. Like, push past it. Don't... Like, just forward. You don't need... It's like, you don't make that mistake again, sort of thing. Rather than being like, it's okay that you made that mistake. And like...
It's the forgiveness.
Yeah. I'm not good at that bit. I need to learn how to do the softness bit. Because I'm like... I can get up and keep going and then, you know, farther down the line, I'll be like, why am I still sad?
Ooh, forgiveness letters to ourselves are so powerful.
I don't even know how to go about writing. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, if you put a piece of paper in front of me and said, write your first one, I would not know where to start. Like, it's so foreign to me.
Okay, I've written a few. So can I give a little
guideline please.
Of what I would do? I would get myself into a zone of remembering why I'm hurt. And I would like start listing about like all the feelings that I felt of like during that period that were associated with negativity. And then I will trace back into what actions and circumstances led me to feeling this way. And then I would write out, I'm sorry that I put you in a position to create this sadness.
Oh, I can already think of so many.
Yeah. So for example,
cheerful exercise.
So for example, in regards of the last relationship, one of the things that I have forgiven myself for is for sticking in a situation with somebody who didn't respect or live up to your worth. So I wrote, Henley, I'm really sorry that I let you stay in a situation where someone didn't love and respect your worth enough for so long. I'm sorry I did that for you. I'm sorry it made you feel like you were not enough.
Can you write that down on my paper? Because I had the exact same thought.
Girl,
about
you
my
write,
last.
You write these letters down, you cry your eyes out, and then if you want to, you can burn them, but I don't want to burn these things. And you just acknowledge these versions of ourselves.
I think I've definitely started to acknowledge, like especially with respect to my last relationship, which I think we spoke about it a few episodes ago where like some scar tissue flared up and I was reprocessing a lot of what happened. And that was the first time I kind of approached it with a bit of softness towards myself to be like, you shouldn't have had to go through that. Mm-hmm. That was a very, that just opened a gate.
Mm.
And I was in that puddle pit of tears for like a week. Mm. Like, it was so confronting. And to say that we have to do that on the regular is very scary.
That's self-preservation. That's the only way we're going to be able to really like continue the rest of our lives with a sense of self. We need to acknowledge self.
Yeah.
And also, like, to get a little bit more deeper into this, one of the most powerful things that therapy has taught me is to identify different versions of myself. Like, I don't think I've shared this with you, but in my head, I have 7 versions of me that I know.
Minimum.
That
I feel like 50.
Yeah. I have 7 versions of myself. I have my inner child who's 7. I have my teenage brat who's 16. I have my, like, 70-year-old self who's got white hair and she looks like Rick Roll's wife. Rich Roll's, what's his name?
Rich Roll.
Rich Roll's wife.
His wife is beautiful.
Yeah. So
and she is not 70.
She's in there. Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I have me in my current state. Mm-hmm. And then I have, okay, maybe it's 5. I have what I call the prowless. And she's the one who controls my relationship with male attention.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I have 5 identifiable versions of me in my head. Oh, no. I have 1 more, 6. I have the, what's it called? Anxiously attached girlfriend who's always freaking out.
Got you. So the high maintenance.
Yeah. So I have had enough sessions with therapists and myself where I literally sit and I talk to these versions of myself.
This is your hypnotherapy.
This is the hypnotherapy, but I've done it in another session. And it sounds crazy, but when I identify all these different layers of myself, like the weight of always putting so much on my own shoulders, it has been lifted because it's shared now between my 6 personalities.
This is so interesting because, okay, first observation is that like your personalities are across sort of like your lifeline. Like
they're my trigger points. They're my pain points.
But it's also like a straight line in terms of your life timeline sort of thing. Like these are people for different phases, but they come up across time and space.
Yeah.
But then every single time I've thought about like dimensions of my personality, and I remember telling a date this once, and for some reason it didn't freak him out at all. But when I think about it, it freaks me out. Where I was talking about different dimensions of self, and I always thought about it as like, this is my intellectual self. This is my social extroverted self. This is my professional self. And like, he said, okay, so how do you decide who to bring into a room? And I was like, well, then it's like a Rubik's cube. Like I twist it. So there's a combination of each in different proportions. And that's why I present who I think is most appropriate.
At the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then my vulnerability one is like really small.
But yeah, but all the ones that you've listed, those are still like
External facing selves.
Yeah. The ones that are like the ones that I feel like maybe want to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
Are the ones that are really behind closed doors.
Oh, big time. So then so there's the socially anxious self who is very much a little girl.
What age is she?
She's 4 or 5.
Is that your inner child?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's sitting at the top of a slide.
Okay.
When there's a whole birthday party happening inside a house of all of her classmates, but she was too scared to go into the house.
Aww.
That's my socially anxious self. That's who I picture when I think of my social anxiety.
So that's not your inner child. That's socially anxious, Marissa.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that plays into my inner child because my inner child was a very anxious.
Okay. Like, but it wasn't her full identity.
No.
Exactly. So that was like a part of her.
Yeah. And then there's the... They all stem from when I was a kid. Like there was the, and I think I honored this one a lot. The girl who was just wanted to be tough and play with the big boys. Like I wanted to play tackle sports. I wanted to like know that I could fight back. Like I wanted to be this little warrior kid.
Okay, so she was the feisty warrior, like
super feisty,
hyper feminist. Like I want to roll with the boys. Like
tomboy.
Yeah,
and I still embrace her today. Like I love her.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. So then there's obviously the intellectual one because I was always the nerd growing up and it's an identity I take a lot of pride in. And that's the one where I like surprising people sometimes with how smart I am because I've always encountered that people don't realize I'm smart. Which I thought was the most obvious energy I put out, because sometimes I'm kind of a little intellectually arrogant.
I feel like people know you're smart off the bat.
But then sometimes when they look at me a little shocked with what comes out my mouth, I'm like, oh, you thought I was dumb? My teachers in school thought I was dumb.
I don't think their face is out of shock because they thought you were dumb. I think their face is just in surprise at what you said was so smart. It's not because you're dumb. It's like, oh, I didn't think of that. It's like a new angle for them.
That is a better way of interpreting it than I have interpreted it throughout the course of my life. I think I interpreted it that way because I remembered a teacher being surprised that I was getting A's on my tests because he thought I was dumb.
Well, he sounds like an asshole.
Yeah, he was low-key. But yeah, so there's the intellectual side. And I think that's the one that drives my career to a big extent. And my career is a huge point of pride. So love her too. And then there's like the thirsty little hoe that stays under wraps for the most part. I think people listening to this podcast know that it's a very big part of me, but I think I don't outwardly project very much sexual energy in public. So she's a little secret.
Okay. But she's in there.
She's definitely in there.
So I love this. I love how we have these identifiable traits and versions of ourselves. And I think it's important to continuously acknowledge them. And one of the greatest things that I do with these is that I create like a pros and cons list for each of them.
Their strengths and weaknesses.
Their strengths and weaknesses.
Like their Pokemon card of
stats. Yeah, exactly. It's like a little, like they're like our Pokemon. Literally, they're our Pokemons.
Yeah. And I choose you.
Yeah. Yeah. And by doing this, it just, it takes a lot of self-judgment away. It adds a lot of compassion to my life because...
They can
all exist at once. And the weight that I feel when I go through moments of dips or just, you know, feeling overwhelmed, it helps me really scale things back and like switch perspective and come to myself with kindness. So, yeah, I think like if there's anything, maybe, because you know how we always want to like depart a little something to you guys to consider, maybe consider the various parts of you that live within. And coming back to like the whole forgiveness letter and the acknowledgement towards them, maybe this can be a little prompt for all of us to do just that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we've spoken again before about like, what will it take to be that girl, the girl who can do it all? And I think in this frame of thinking, we're basically saying you can always do it all, but not all at the same time. Mm. So it's kind of picking and choosing your best self for whichever scenario presents itself. Because there are definitely also situations where you present the wrong self for the wrong situation.
Oh,
we all make that mistake.
100%.
Like, yeah, you can't bring your host self to...
Hosting world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, but like, it's going to change
it's gonna
be a
awkward.
Bit. It's a little weird. You're like a corporate conference and you're there like, hi, zaddies. Welcome to... Oil and gas con. What's your net worth?
Yeah, no, I don't see that happening.
Try it. See what happens. Oh my God, you're going to get married that way. They're going to be like, they're going to start bidding and be like, my bonus was what? $5 million. And you'll be like, anyone higher?
Wow, the scene just got very twisted. Is that what you think I do?
That's what I hope you do.
Anyway.
Take your bestie to work day. That's what I'm going to see.
Take your best what?
Your bestie to work day.
Bestie at work?
You know how it's like take your daughter to work day, but it's take your bestie.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, that flew over my head. Anyways, where was I? So yeah, guys, I feel like we've covered a lot in this episode. We hit on topics of therapy, sexuality, the voices in our heads.
The dimensions, the Rubik's Cube that are each of our personalities.
Like, just yesterday after I finished my therapy session, I messaged Marissa being like, I am a complex woman. And she was like, no shit.
Yeah. It was like we were saying that, like, you come to these realizations that I think sometimes other people standing from the outside can see very matter-of-factly. So when you come to realize it for yourself, it's like a whoa moment.
Yeah. I mean, having a lot of those. But if it's anything to soften everyone else's experiences, we're supposed to be like this. We're supposed to be complex beings. We're not supposed to be, you know, cookie cutter, black or white. Things are like this and like that. There's so much gray space for us to explore and discover and realize about ourselves and each other. And I love it and I'm here for it. And we will, to the best of our ability, be showing up with more of it.
Yeah, which is, again, another way in which we are sharing so much of ourselves on this podcast to the point where I feel like sometimes the people who listen know us better than some of our friends do.
Truly, it's like a family at this point.
It is.
Yeah.
And like every single time we get the messages that come in saying, you know, when's the next one coming? Or like, I related to X. Or when you spoke about that, I connected with Y.
It means like, so much to us.
Yeah. Because like we said, sometimes it is scary to share, you know, what's going on inside your mind or something you've been through. So then, you know, the one moment, one single person goes, I feel you. You're like, oh, thank God.
Thank fuck. So anyway, let's create more of those moments of I'm not the only one, I'm not alone, and I hear you. And you guys know exactly what to do. Like, share, rate, reply, save, re-listen, like, post. I don't know. Just get involved. We love hearing from you. And we appreciate you.
Love you.
So we will catch you in a couple weeks if we keep the streak.
We can't kill the streak at 2.
Okay. We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.